Welcome to the March 31st Investment Committee meeting. The first item is roll call. Winter?
Chair Carvalho?
Here.
Vice Chair Perkins?
Here.
Regent Brager? Regent Cruz Crawford?
Here.
Regent Tarkanian? You have a quorum. Advisory members, Mr. Garcia, Mr. Densler.
Present.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. The next item is the Pledge of Allegiance. So if you'll please rise and join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And next, I'd like to take a moment to read the land acknowledgement. Before beginning, we take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, Washo, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. We'll move on to public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Reno?
There is no public comment in Reno.
Thank you. I see no public comment here in Las Vegas. So we will move on to item number two, minutes of the September 30th, 2022 meeting of this committee. I will entertain a motion for approval.
So moved, Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Regent Perkins. Do I have a second?
I'll second. I was not elected at the time, but I would second the motion.
Thank you, Regent Brager. I appreciate it. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carries. Item number three is the chair's report. First, I'd like to say welcome to everybody on this committee, especially our newest regents. I'm new to this position as well as the chair. I served on this committee for a time. So I think that there's a lot for all of us to learn, and I hope that especially the regents on the committee and those who are not on the committee but also participating ask questions and engage with our subject matter experts on this committee. It's a little bit unique in that we have some ex officio members who are non-voting members, but they are really the true advocates for us in this, and so I would really ask you to participate and ask questions when you're not sure, which I think in this committee there might be a lot for us to learn on. So with that said, I will move on to item number four, investment committee orientation and duties. And for that, I'm going to have Assistant Chief Financial Officer Rhett Vertree speak to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. Good morning, members of the board. Rhett Vertree for the record. You've been provided an orientation package for your review. It contains important information about your roles and responsibilities as part of the investment committee. I'm not going to go through the whole packet, but I've prepared a few remarks on the principles of governance and your role. You may already understand most of this. There are two pools of assets you govern, the operating pool and the endowment pool. The committee has fiduciary duties pertaining to both pools. The pools have different functions. The operating pool is used to manage the day-to-day activities of the system. The endowment pool is made up of gifts from donors who frequently impose restrictions on how the gifts are to be used and occasionally how they must be invested. The objectives and policies of both pools are contained in your packet. In addition, you'll find in your packet NSHE's mission statement, the investment committee charter, other governing documents, and articles on investment practices. They define and describe your responsibilities as fiduciaries of the system. There are other laws that govern behavior by fiduciaries that are not part of your packet. An example is the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. This act sets a statutory standard of prudence for the behavior of fiduciaries who have authority over donor-restricted funds. Nevada has accepted this act in 2006. To comply with the act, fiduciaries must familiarize themselves with its requirements, actively considering the multiple specific factors set forth in law when investing, spending, or delegating, and documenting those actions in the minutes of investment committee. The concept of procedural prudence is intended to enable fiduciaries to demonstrate that their behavior complies with the standards of the law. It's important to integrate this process into the investment committee's practices when discussing matters related to the endowment. You will also consider whether to engage in any of the investment practices that come under the general heading of responsible or sustainable investing. These include SRI, ESG, and impact investing. SRI, or socially responsible investing, is the practice of excluding certain themes or investments that the committee believes are contrary to NSHE's values or mission. ESG, or environmental, social, and governance integration, is the practice of seeking investment in companies that rate high on these factors. And then impact investing is the practice of choosing investments that have both an economic return and a mission-aligned purpose. I'd say our portfolio now incorporates all these in some aspect. In deciding whether or not to use these practices, the committee must recognize that, absent a clear statement of intent by a donor, social benefit cannot be the sole consideration when investing the portfolio. For most organizations, the desire is to optimize three outcomes: the long-term risk-adjusted investment return, that is as high as prudently achievable; a long-term amount spent in support of the organization's mission, that is high as prudently achievable; volatility of the amount distributed from year to year, that is low as prudently achievable. Among these three goals, compromises must be made in the organization to succeed over the long term. To achieve these goals, perhaps the most important set of actions you can take with respect to investing is the development and regular review of policies and procedures that govern the investment process. As a member of the investment committee, you are charged with creating and overseeing the investment policy and spending practices. That includes my overview. Please let me know if you have any questions.
Can I be recognized by the chair?
Yes, Regent Breaker.
Thank you. So my question may not be at the appropriate time because first time on this meeting and I have done my homework, but just in case. So on the endowment side, when those funds come in, do we get notice of what and where they need to go, and how do we monitor them, and how are we sure they're spent appropriately?
So our funds, we manage what has traditionally been an endowment pool that was originally NSHE was its own entity. And we manage an endowment pool where the funds came into NSHE and not to the institution. Now all the institutions have their own foundations. So our pool is pretty much static. We really don't get many new endowments to NSHE directly any longer. We get a few. But we do, and so we have your policies actually tell us how to invest and manage those funds and how to distribute those funds. And so we do a distribution quarterly on those funds.
Okay.
And, you know, it's based on earnings, and we have a distribution percentage that we utilize based on your policies.
So in that percentage, mm-hmm. Are we given only notice if a certain amount is over or under, or do we know quarterly where that money is going and that it's spent, that donor that gave it originally, it's going where it needs to go?
Yes.
Okay.
So we give it to the campuses, and then the campuses distribute it based on the donor's intent. Yeah.
And who monitors that they're doing that then? Since our responsibility is
it's monitored at the campus level. We know which accounts that money's supposed to go into.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when it gets to them, they're responsible for actually putting it into the individual accounts that they use to manage those activities.
Okay.
And then it's monitored, you know, they're supposed to actually report back to the donors and
they're supposed
like that.
To though,
yeah.
But do they?
Yeah.
Keywords you got to watch for. Yeah. So I usually don't ask a lot of questions, but I think this is important, and it's a fiduciary responsibility of where those monies are and when they come in. And if we don't get a specific report campus by campus of what they have and that they're spending it right, ultimately it's our problem, I think, on the big picture. So if there's not an accountability factor, I'd like to see that we build that in to be able to know that the funds are being spent like they should. Because is it a two-check person? Is it a three-check person? Do you verify that? So I don't want to make it a big deal, but I think it is important when we're talking about possibly millions of dollars.
Right. And, okay? And your biggest monitoring practice is through internal audit. Internal audit does do...
Only every year, or...
They don't do it. They do it when they schedule it. So it's not...
So we don't know when it's scheduled.
Yeah, you don't have a policy that says...
So we need a policy to make sure that the money that they're getting... is, I'm not trying to get into the minutiae or the weeds of somebody else's business, but once in a while, if someone gets an audit and you think, oh, well, did they spend it? I mean, we're talking about diversity of funds and huge institutions. So I think, and I'll look further into it, but I think it's important. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for those questions, Regent Brager. I think that they are definitely worth considering. I do appreciate that. Are there any other questions or comments from those on the committee or other regents in attendance today?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Regent Boylan.
Thank you, ma'am. Good morning. Regent Brager, what she just said is really important. I believe strongly in accountability. And I think it is our business, even if it is getting into the weeds and to the, you know, minutest detail as far as money is concerned. I think it's really important that we have all accountability. And I appreciate what she said, because it's something I've been beating that drum for a while. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. I believe that... CFO Klinger is joining us in the north today. While Regent Brager brought up this point, I was thinking about the legislative audit that just happened, and they did audit our foundations, and I was wondering if Mr. Klinger had any response. Given that audit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, CFO Klinger, I appreciate the opportunity to respond. And to Regent Brager and Regent Boylan's comments, I think we can certainly look at developing some reporting that could come back to this committee on how the funds are spent. But Madam Chair, to your question specifically on the legislative audit, I'm very proud to say and kudos to my assistant CFO, Rhett, and his team, because the Inchi endowment was audited by the LCB auditors. And I'm proud to say that of all the areas they audited, this is the only one that did not have a single finding or recommendation. So I think the policies that this committee has developed over the years were found to be effective.
Thank you, Mr. Klinger, for that response. I was also wondering if our representative, Mr. Densler from UNR, had any input on this. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but just wondering if you have anything to say.
Not at all, Chair. Yes. So the monies you're talking from the NC side do not flow in and through the UNR Foundation, of which I am. We do, just to give a sense of how that happens in the North, is we do a full reporting back to all donors as to, you know, what their performance is on their individual endowments within the UNR Foundation. And there is, as CFO Klinger was just talking about, the same thing, UNR is audited on an annual basis as part of the overall audit process that happens within the system of higher education. and we had a clean audit. So all of that same level of accountability is happening on an annual basis, as well as reporting back to the donors. The piece you're talking about, I believe, is the piece that comes out of the NC endowment and goes directly into the university. So that is a flow that's outside of my knowledge at this point. But I'm sure I can pass this along as well to work on developing it. But I am sure that it's going to be easy to provide that reporting that you're looking for, Regent Brager.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Densler. I'm not sure if Mr. Garcia is on the call. I'm getting the signal that he's not. So I did want to give him that opportunity as well if he was with us. But are there any other questions from regents on the committee or those in attendance? Yes. Chancellor Urquiaga.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. So this question is either for, I think, Andrew or for Rhett. Because of a couple bills moving at the legislature that deal with this entity, could you give this committee a short explanation of where the land grant dollars were placed in the 19th century. So for the newer regents' edification, when the system then, the university, was created, it was this board was created to receive sales from certain lands set aside under the Morrill Act. And those monies accrue to those institutions deemed to be land-grant institutions, originally just UNR, but now by legislative action, UNR, UNLV, and DRI. And there is a conversation at the legislature about the system and the university and where those dollars might go if the system were broken up. So could you tell us, are they in our endowment or were they distributed to the entities?
Thank you, Chancellor.
Madam Chair, for the...
Yes, please, CFO Klinger.
Sorry, Madam Chair, for the record, Andrew Klinger, CFO, to the Chancellor's question. So there is a what I would call a sub-account within the ENCHI endowment that contains the funds that the Chancellor is referring to. And it actually has a name, that sub-account, and I can't remember it off the top of my head currently. But currently those funds are, so the ENCHI endowment, as Rhett described, is essentially the institution's funds that this committee manages and invests on behalf of the institution. So it's the two universities, the community colleges, DRI, they are all part of the ENCHI endowment. And so the piece that the Chancellor is speaking about is within the University of Nevada, Reno allocation of that pool. As to the second part of that, you know, if there was a bill that passed the legislature that suddenly split up the system and there was an intent to take those land grant monies and spread it out, I'm not sure what that would look like. That would become, there would be a lot of legal analysis that would need to be done on exactly how to do that. That would be a very complex issue to sort of unwind.
Thank you, Mr. Klinger. And thank you for that question, Chancellor Urquiaga. That's timely and an important part of the discussion here.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if this is the right spot to do it. I'm not on this committee, I know, but maybe I'll make it a regent's request. I think it would really help the newbies, and I'm pretending I'm doing this just for them, but it would really help all of us if we could get an outline of the different foundations and the different grants that we are responsible for or that are floating around in all the colleges and universities. Now, remember, I'm pretending like I already know that and I'm doing it just for the newbie regents. But I think it would help a lot of us. What do you think, Madam Chair? Was that Regent request, or is it something that your committee could put together for the rest of us?
Regent Boylan, you're asking.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, you're asking specifically for the accounts that flow through the system's endowment or operating accounts. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
That's another good idea. But also, that's why I said I'm not sure if it's here, but just an outline and the names of all the foundations and grants that are floating around NSHE. If there's someone there that knows that, that would be great. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. I do hear Mr. Vertree saying that they are in our financial statement. Before I allow him to address that, I'm going to go to Mr. Joel Becker with the Deputy Attorney General's office.
Thank you very much. This is Deputy Attorney General Becker for the record. Just want to remind the board that this agenda item is an information-only agenda item. It's not labeled for discussion, and if you want to bring up questions and things like that to be discussed, there might be a better way of doing it, perhaps an agenda item for the next one or just an email directly to whomever you want the information from. Remember, it's an information-only agenda item. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. Appreciate that, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Becker.
Thank you, ma'am.
And we can certainly entertain new business at the end of the meeting as well. I'm going to go to Regent Breaker.
Thank you. And I'm just going to make a point of reference. If I'm wrong, you may stop me at any time. I'm going to make a suggestion that on these committees that we serve on individually, any regent is welcome to come. And I understand your policies are unique and different from where maybe I've served before. I'm going to make a suggestion that we get through our committee as a committee member. Any questions from an outside member be either at the end or come back to one of our main meetings or given to the chancellor, because we have a responsibility, as each of us do in our individual meetings. And I think that it prolongs a meeting when not always necessary. I'm being very bold here. I want to be polite, but I really would like us to move through our meeting and any comments be at the end, if that could be on any committee that we have. That's my suggestion for the future, and if it needs to be a new business policy, then I will create that. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Regent Breaker. I was going to go to Mr. Vertrees next.
Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to reference in the financial statements that it is under Note 22 of the financial statements, all our system-related organizations. That's it, if you want to review that.
Thank you, Mr. Vertrees.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Regent Boylan.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Becker, what Regent Breger just said, that is that part of an agenda item? And why was she allowed to say that if it's not an agenda item and this was just an information item? Appreciate it, sir. I'd like to know.
Thank Becker for the record. I would never dream of interrupting a board member while they're giving a speech or suggestion. Her idea is a suggestion that could be put forward as a new agenda item and voted on. If it's not an internal policy, that could be assuaged that way. And I'm not trying to play favorites either way. I just want to make sure that we get through the meeting as quickly and efficiently as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr.
Becker.
Sir. Appreciate it.
I'm going to go to Regent Perkins next. Vice Chair Perkins, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to comment, the purpose of these meetings is for us to learn. And we can't, if you have a question, I feel it very important for all of our understanding to ask the question right then and there when it's hot and fresh, and try to dissuade people from talking just because of time is kind of closing down the meeting, and that's not the purpose. We're all here to learn, and we all have different ideas. And I know Joel's going to interrupt me, right? thank you. I'm done.
Thank you. I'm going to Mr. Becker next. Thank you.
Again, Dag Becker for the record. I don't think that this is being shut down for any reason besides it's an information-only agenda item. If it was labeled as discussion for the public to be aware of, that would be no problem. But this is very specific agenda item, and questions on it, either A, make it a discussion agenda item next time, or B, like Regent Prager suggested, just write down your questions, save it for the public comment period, and then you can put your question forward on the record, and it can be responded to at the next meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. I will ask one more time, if you have anything specific to item number four, the materials that were part of that agenda item, which is our orientation for this committee. Otherwise, I'm going to move on to item number five. Okay, with that said, I'm going to move to item number five, operating pool performance discussion and recommendations. We have staff from Cambridge Associates, which is our OCIO here with us at our Northern Nevada location in Reno. Please go ahead, Cambridge.
Thank you so much. For the record, Wendy Walker of Cambridge Associates. If I might start out on a personal note, I'd like to acknowledge that this is the first time in my career that I've presented to an all-female investment committee, and it's quite an honor that I'm often the only woman in the room, so it's a real pleasure. So thank you. Looking at our operating fund materials, you know, folks, I'm sure, have seen on the news a lot of distressing headlines over the month of March related to the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and broader weakness in the banking sector. We've presented a lot of analyses at the time that we submitted these materials that really spoke directly to that crisis. I'm happy to note that due to very quick government intervention with Silicon Valley Bank and the banking system more broadly, the concerns in the banking system have abated to date. And in fact, stocks and bonds have turned around to really show that the market has been calming. So I might just speak to some updates that have happened since these materials were published, just that stocks are up this week. They're closing the month of March in positive territory. Bonds, the U.S. 10-year yield, which is often considered to be an indicator of sort of a flight to quality and concerns, yields have gone back up. And they had collapsed as low as they started the month at 4% 10-year bond yields. They went down to 3.3%, which meant that investors were pouring more money into treasuries as a flight to safety. Now those yields are going back up as investors in the markets are more calm. Now, looking into the future, the federal funds futures contracts, the market is suggesting to us that markets expect the central bank, the U.S. Fed, to put in place two more cuts to the target Fed funds rate by November. They're pricing it at around 4.5%. This is a little bit more optimistic in our view than what we've heard coming out of Fed spokespeople, although some of the more recent news around inflation, again, moderating in February after a slight uptick in January had spooked markets. All of these metrics seem to be normalizing. I might point to slide 17 in the operating fund book, and is anyone running slides? I think there had been a request at prior meetings to run slides. I don't know if that's available. But if folks have their own copies, it's slide 17, which indicates that as a result of the turmoil in March, the dark green line up at the top of page 17 shows what markets had been pricing in for the short-term Fed funds rate. This is the cash yield paid on deposits throughout the country. And then that is now gone down in the lighter green line at the bottom. So against this background, when we sent out these materials originally, the operating fund was roughly flat for the month of March. We're happy to say that now, as of yesterday, the operating fund was up about 1.1% for the month of March through yesterday. This puts the reserve account back now into what we estimate to be very barely positive territory after it had been in deficit for some time. I might jump ahead to page to talk about performance to, page 23 of the materials, where our supplemental information showed fiscal year-to-date performance of positive 2.3% through the end of February. That's lagging the operating fund dynamic index by 50 basis points. There's a couple of reasons for that shorter-term underperformance. One is within the long-term pool, the global ex-U.S. equity. This is international developed equities. That composite underperformed its benchmark. And then the other reason was, but I would say that was largely offset by the fact that TIPS outperformed its benchmark by 50 basis points. Over the longer term, the long-term pool has returned 5.6% over the trailing 5 years, 6.6% over the trailing 10 years, and that's slightly ahead of or in line with the benchmark. I'll take a step back and note that while Regent Carvalho is correct that Cambridge Associates serves as outsourced chief investment officer of the endowment, we serve as advisors to this committee for the operating fund. So we make recommendations, and this committee reserves the discretion to approve recommendations that might come from either NG staff on the sizing of the short-term and intermediate-term pools. And then for allocations and rebalancing within the long-term pool, we make those recommendations to this committee and share our rationale for the committee to approve as you see fit. And I would also flag that this this pool is designed to be a low-cost and quite simple portfolio, just stocks and bonds. This is in contrast to what you'll hear from my colleague EJ when he talks about the endowment fund, which has quite a bit of alternative assets in terms of hedge funds, in terms of private equity, venture capital, et cetera. One of the consequences of this being a rather simple stock bond portfolio is it is relatively more sensitive to market movements. And it's almost all invested passively as well, I would add. So in calendar year 2022, the long-term pool within the operating fund returned negative 14.7%, being in just the stock bond blend. It was a terrible year for both stocks and bonds, and given that it's passively managed for the large part, you got slightly better than the market return, but just barely. This is in contrast, you'll hear from EJ that over calendar year 22, the endowment was down just negative 10.7%, so 4 percentage points of outperformance. So I just wanted to give that context for, especially for the newer members of the committee. On page 24, again, just for the newer members of the committee, this illustrates the balances in the long-term, intermediate-term, and short-term pools over time. And I know in a later agenda item, we'll be discussing, staff does an annual review of whether to reallocate between the short or intermediate-term pools, which are designed to meet the system's very short term and then intermediate term liquidity needs versus invest in the longer term purposes. Page 25 looks, and this won't change from quarter to quarter when we present it, but it looks at the long term expected return of this operating fund. It's built to generate about just under a 4% return. So somewhat, somewhat sleepy when we compare it to the endowment. But again, that's because a large part of this is invested in very short-term bonds that are intended to support liquidity, liquidity needs for the institution. And then the final point I'll make is on page 26, which looks at the fact that although over the very long term, we would expect a median return of 3.8%, over shorter term periods, this band of returns can be very, very large. And we saw that in calendar year 22, where, as I noted, this pool was down negative, or the long-term pool at least was down negative 14.7%. And then the total pool was down negative 10.7%. So you see here that over short-term periods, this band of expected returns, because of market volatility, it's going to be quite wide. But then over the longer term, these bands of expected returns get more and more narrow. So I'll pause there and see if there are any questions or comments.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. Are there any questions from the committee? I do have a question and a comment. First, comment. It's interesting to hear you remind us very often that investing is a long-term behavior, and so sometimes, especially recently, it's been difficult to see some of the returns on this long-term. The result, or I'll use a term that I learned, alpha, and I'm not sure if that's really what is appropriate here, but I think it is. The alpha is good. So I think we have to always keep that in mind, that long-term goal is much more important than the short-term unrealized loss that we see sometimes, especially recently. I did want to ask you mentioned a little earlier regarding page 23, and I don't think it was necessarily regarding that specifically, but you mentioned that the accounts are passively managed. Can you maybe speak to that a little bit more for us, please?
Sure, absolutely. So passive management, sometimes it's also called indexing. Many of us have Vanguard as a popular index provider in our own personal accounts. At least that's where a lot of my retirement funds are. But the operating pool is in fact allocated very largely to Vanguard funds. So for example, the U.S. equity allocation is exclusively in a Vanguard U.S. fund. I think the management fee is 2 basis points or 0.02% per year. And it's just basically invested in the market. There's no managers trying to outperform the market. There's no higher fees. This is widely seen to be a very liquid, reasonable way to invest money over the long term. You just take the market returns without striving for outperformance. Does that address the question?
Yes, thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee or others in attendance? All right. I do have one other thing regarding Vanguard as a benchmark. Is MSCI also a benchmark, or is that something different?
No, you're absolutely right. MSCI is a benchmark, and I should clarify, Vanguard is an asset manager. So we have hired Vanguard and placed the system's assets into various funds, mutual funds that they manage on behalf of investors. But then MSCI is a benchmark that we use in many asset classes, and I'm trying to see which asset classes we have it on. Right. So for global ex-US equity, this is the international allocation. This is the MSCI EAFE index, which is an index that MSCI puts together that covers international developed markets. So that would be excluding emerging markets. So the global ex-US line up top, the gray line, that would be what the system has earned in the what is currently exclusively the Vanguard Index. And then below it is the MSCI EAFE. This is a benchmark. Now, there can be sometimes some slight differences between different index providers. It gets very wonky very quickly, but, you know, whether Hong Kong is considered an emerging market or Korea is considered an emerging market versus a developed market, it might vary by index providers. So over, say, short-term periods, 1 year, two different indices might look different. But over the very long term, these tend to basically neutralize. You wouldn't see big differences between indices.
Thank you for that clarification. I do reminds me we had a bit of a conversation at the last meeting regarding benchmarks and the differences in them. So thank you. I think we can move on to the next part. Thank you.
That's all we had for this agenda item in prepared remarks. Sorry.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry I was late on the trigger on that one. I do have a question.
Please go ahead.
Why do we keep an operating fund?
Yes, why do we keep an operating fund?
Yes.
Madam Chair, for the record, CFO Klinger. So if you look at, I think the way to think of it is, and this is going to be, I think, very simplistic, but we have eight institutions. You can think of eight institutions each having sort of their own checking account, right? And this is obviously very simplistic. What we do is we take those eight checking accounts, actually nine if you include system administration, and we pool them together. And that essentially is the operating pool. And because we have economies of scale and because we have an operating pool that has funds in it that are not needed for daily operations, we invest those to get a return on it. In this case, we invest it in these passive mutual funds to generate earnings for the institutions. And if you look at in your supplemental material, for example, if you look at page 36 in there, what you'll see in this is the reserve account analysis. And so if you look at that analysis, what you can see is in that first column, the market value there, and it varies between 800 million down to 724 million. And it just depends on the timing of whether or not there's payroll, whether or not there's student fees coming in, that value changes. And then you can see the next column over if you look at investment income. So that's the income or losses that we've earned on the operating pool. Unfortunately, we have experienced some losses with the rest of the market as well. And then the investment income distributed. So what we do is we invest these funds essentially on behalf of the institutions, because, again, think of it as eight or nine checkbooks, and we're investing it on behalf of the institutions. And so what we do is on a monthly basis, we distribute earnings back to the institutions for them to be able to spend. So, for example, our distribution rate is 2.75%. So normally, every month, we will distribute 2.75% back to the campuses. What you can see if you're looking at page 36 is you can see the column labeled investment income distributed, and what you see there on page 36 is a lot of zeros. Well, because the earnings in the account have been below what we've already distributed, we stopped the distributions until that account comes positive again. This is actually in the operating pool investment policy. And so you can see there in January of 23, the reserve account balance went back to positive. And so normally we would be doing distributions in the future based on that back to the campuses. So the short answer is we pool all of our cash together as institutions. We invest it because, again, we don't use all of that cash on a day-to-day basis. And over the long run, we get a pretty decent return back to the campuses for doing that.
Thank you. A follow-up question, if I may.
Sure.
Okay. Explain how the operating fund helped us during the COVID reductions when we all had to cut back and tighten our waist belts.
Sure. For the record, CFO Klinger. So again, if you're looking at page 36, I think this is maybe the best way to explain it. So again, as you look at that column that is labeled reserve account ending balance. So prior to the pandemic, the policy was that we would have monthly distributions based on the rate. Again, that rate is 2.75%. So every month we would distribute 2.75%. Back then, we didn't have the current policy that we have in place, and I'll talk about that in a second. And so that reserve account ending balance built up over time to the point where if you're looking at that column now and you see a positive $10 million at the end of January, when we were dealing with budget reductions during the pandemic, that account had a balance, I believe, over $80 million in it that had built up over time of earnings that essentially were not distributed out to the campuses. And so what we did as part of offsets to the institutions is we distributed essentially earnings that had not been distributed, that had built up over time back to the campuses. And we actually did that, I think it was $71 million-ish, if I remember correctly. And then we also had another $50 million that had been set aside by this committee prior of earnings that, again, had not been distributed. And so we distributed that back to the campuses as well. Since then, we've actually changed the policy, I think, in a good way. The policy used to allow us to make distributions even when that reserve account balance was negative. We no longer do that. If that account balance falls below negative, we don't make distributions. And if it falls below 3% for three consecutive months, we don't do distributions. So that's on the low end of it. On the high end, if that balance exceeds 8%, we automatically distribute the excess above 8% to the campuses. So normally they get a 2.75% rate of return. If that account builds up over time because we're earning more than 2.75%, and once it gets over 8%, then we distribute the excess back to the campuses.
Thank you, Mr. Klinger. I will note also that in our materials on page 35, it does have it does show that in September 2020, there is a footnote 20 that shows it was a $73 million disbursement to all of the campuses. And in August, there we had over $94 million in reserves at over 12%. So I think to your point that we changed the policy, that was, you can see that on here. Vice Chair Perkins, did that answer your question?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll go to Regent Brager.
Just as, is it different from school board to, because I'm not certain, university or college system in regards to an ending fund balance? Is that a separate account versus all the college accounts? And if there's a better place to ask that question, I'm happy to pause on that.
Madam Chair, for the record, CFO Klinger. To Regent Brager, what you're looking at here on the reserve accounts is really just a measure of our earnings on these funds. So, and not just earnings, and I don't mean earnings strictly from the standpoint of, you know, dividends coming in. This is also appreciation in value as well, which I think is a distinction that sometimes gets lost in these discussions. Because I think when people think, oh, you're making a distribution, you're making a cash distribution to the campuses, it's not. We're essentially allocating the earnings out to the campuses. So the reserve account balance here is different than what you're thinking about as an ending fund balance. And we do have that. That's a separate sort of accounting that you'll see in our financial statements.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Klinger. Any other questions or comments? So this is an agenda item that is asking, that's a possible action. Regarding this, on page 7 of the materials, it shows that the recommendation is to rebalance the table, that's a few pages after that, to trim the global ex-U.S. equities to support rebalancing of long-term funds, to take $10 million from Vanguard Developed Markets Index, and then to rebalance that into long-term bonds closer to our policy target, which would be $5 million addition to PIMCO Total Return and a $5 million addition to Wells Capital Montgomery. So that is the suggested action that the committee take. So I would entertain a motion to approve that rebalancing.
Make the motion to approve the rebalancing, Regent Perkins.
Second by Brager.
Thank you. So I have a motion from Regent Perkins and a second from Regent Brager to trim the global ex-U.S. equity by $10 million and to rebalance it $5 million addition to PIMCO Total Return and $5 million addition to Wells Capital Montgomery. With that said, I will call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. We will move on to item number 6, endowment pool performance. And I will go back to Ms. Wendy Walker from Cambridge.
For the record, this is EJ Ogbeche of Cambridge Associates. And happy to speak to Article 6 here and speaking to the and speaking to the updated materials with supplemental information as well. As Wendy alluded to prior, we calendar year 2022, the total endowment returned had a preliminary return of negative 10.7% for the year, outperforming the benchmark by 440 basis points. I would add that this has private investments through the end of Q3. So there is no private investment performance calculated for Q4. But we're still showing our preliminary returns for the calendar year. Q4 performance we expect to come in slightly down and essentially not move the preliminary performance that much, but we do expect that to be slightly down. For the fiscal year ending in February, we have a preliminary return of 3.5%, and that's 200 basis points better than the benchmark. In terms of performance in 2023, we observed that January started off strong, though February we saw a slight pullback. And as, again, Wendy alluded to, March is finishing strong thus far, and the total endowment we estimate that performance to have ended roughly 90 basis points or 0.9% up for that month. As Chair Carvalho referenced, the longer term performance is obviously important as well. So over the OCIO track record, which is as of 6 years as of this month, will be the track record. We are up 6.8%. 200 basis points or 2% better than the benchmark. And over the longer 10-year track record, up 6.5%, 80 basis points better than the benchmark. And just to take a quick step back, as I go through this endowment section, I'll speak to performance a bit more, as just mentioned. I'll talk through briefly asset allocation and compliance that we do for the endowment each quarter, or each meeting. And as well, I will speak to risk and return for the portfolio. I'll speak to the alternatives in the portfolio as well as the legacy assets performance there. And then I'll finish with brief comments about blockchain and crypto assets. It was a question from the last meeting. So jumping to page 9 of the Article 6 and the supplemental materials. Again, I just wanted to point out here the fiscal year return of 3.5%, and in the, you'll see that in the middle of the middle column of the page. Again, 200 basis points better than the benchmark. Jumping ahead to page 10, just to give you to orient you on this page, this performance shows again our OCAO track record through September 30, 2022. So this includes all of our private investment performance, and it's lagged to that date for that reason. We show that the compound return of the average annual compound return is at 6.1%, better than the 4% return of the benchmark. So that 2.1% annualized return over the benchmark, we're definitely pleased with that return. And you'll see that higher Sharpe ratio represents that the better risk return or risk adjusted return for that for the endowment as well. In terms of CA managed assets, you'll see specifically Cambridge managed assets would have a compound annual return of 6.4% versus the benchmark of 4.2%. So again, the outperformance there, 220 basis points, and that is also better than the peer endowments that are between 100 and 400 million in size that had an average compound return of 5.9%. Page 11, very briefly, we'll speak to just the outperformance over, again, the calendar year 2022 with, again, this is preliminary as private investments are calculated through 9/30.
Can I just interrupt you for just a second? I'm sorry. I have a question from Regent Cruz Crawford real quick.
Thank you, Chair Gravallo. Regent Cruz Crawford, for the record, I apologize. This committee is way outside of my wheelhouse, but I know I can learn. You're doing a great job referencing the page numbers, but can you please share, and try not to go over the acronyms, if you can just say what they are, because I'm trying to learn what those mean. So if you can
absolutely
talk to me like I don't know anything about investments, I really appreciate that. If it's something that is outside of, if it's something that only investment person, if you want to just give a quick statement of what that is, that will help the learning process for me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. And so with that, on page 11, I'll just speak to what we're seeing here is showing our outperformance for this specific period. So we're, again, looking at the calendar year of 2022 with private investments through Q3. And on the far left side in gray, you'll see the policy benchmark return of down 15.6%. On the far right in blue, you'll see the down 12.1%. And that's the performance of the total endowment. Or of the CA managed assets. And the difference there we express in the bars in the middle of the page. And we have, and I'm happy to talk through this briefly, the intra-month activity just shows trading, and we expect that to be flat over time. That's not where we typically would expect to see outperformance. Manager selection is where we typically see outperformance. And we have a call-out box there of the top and bottom contributors to that performance. You'll notice private growth in the private investments was the largest contributor, at 2.36% or 236 basis points of contribution to the total return. So of the 12.1%, 2.36% was contributed from private growth. And let me know if that was not clear. Private investments, private real assets contributed 0.79% or 79 basis points. In terms of detractors, marketable alternatives or hedge funds were detracted 1.27% to total returns. And for the record, we have made moves to terminate a certain two managers in that allocation that we do not feel will be contributing long term. So we have made moves there to improve that allocation. And
private growth and private.
Sure. So just to give more context, when we say private growth, we're referring to the venture capital managers and the private equity managers in your portfolio. When we say private real assets, these are private, again, managers that in your real assets allocation. So think of commodities, managers with allocations to hard assets or like oil, infrastructure, inflation-sensitive assets in that regard. Global equity, these are managers that have the mandate to allocate within any country. And then fixed income, of course, the ballast to the portfolio that tends to be more of a stable allocation over time. And then marketable alternatives, this is typically another name for hedge funds in our allocation or diversifiers. These typically are, as the name would suggest, trying to diversify the allocation with differentiated return streams than you would find in typical equity or public equity allocations. In terms of, so that's manager selection, and we show the contribution to returns there. And I would just quickly say the manager structure, this is the performance of the manager versus their benchmark asset class. We see some positive contribution there, and that was really driven by a tilt to value within global equities. Pause there if there are any questions. On the next slide, slide 12, similar slide here, but this is showing over the longer five-year track record. And just to point out, far left again, 3.3% for the policy and 6% for the managed assets, and how we got there in between, we've identified there as well. Similar story. Did want to jump ahead to the benchmark conversation because this was mentioned in the last meeting to discuss here again. I'll start on page 14 just to reference sort of how we think about evaluating performance over different time periods. Over the shorter term period, this is where we're using the policy benchmark for a rolling three-year performance as a way to compare and understand how well the portfolio has done. Over the longer market cycles, we have the simple risk equivalent benchmark. So if you've heard of a 60-40 or a 70-30 portfolio, 70% of that is in equities or stocks, 30% of that is in fixed income or bonds. This is what we would look to compare the portfolio to over a full market cycle, so 5 to 10 year rolling periods. And then the longer term objective is to beat to have a better performance than the distribution plus inflation, which we show here for, again, the rolling 10-year period. And there, we have a slide to show that in better detail. But we're looking at performance over multiple time periods in terms of understanding performance. And more specifically for the question on page 15, the question of will the Wilshire 500 the right benchmark for the endowment? And to jump to the chase, we still think that it is, and there isn't much different than the Russell 3000. What we've shown here is that the performance between the two, the Wilshire 500, the Wilshire 5000, and the Russell 3000, I've shown that the performance is very, very close, almost indistinguishable between the two. We've highlighted that, you know, 5 years over since 2008, the Russell has done slightly better in the green boxes there, and over that same period, the Wilshire has done better in 7 of those years. So. And even when we look at years where the performance was very close, the Wilshire 5000 has outperformed slightly. So We do think that it is a slightly tougher hurdle to beat. And so we're comfortable keeping the Wilshire 5000 as the benchmark. I might, I think slides 16, 17, and 18 just show, again, this graphically what were the three different time periods that we referenced for the benchmarks for rolling 3, rolling 5, and rolling 10. So let me pause there if there are any questions.
Are there any questions from members of the committee? I think we can move on. Thank you.
I'll be brief for asset allocation and compliance. You know, slide 20, we show that we are in the allowable ranges for each of the asset classes. Slide 21, we show that we are still below 39% in private investments, highlighted in the yellow boxes below, and below 54% for private investments plus the unfunded commitments to those private investments. So we are still in compliance. Jumping ahead to slide 23, this is looking at the risk return of the portfolio. The policy or the passive exposure, the passive benchmark that Wendy alluded to, we expect the performance to be 5.9% over the very long term. And you'll see that at the far right, or the darker blue of the columns on the right hand side of the page. And that compares favorably to the a 70-30 index that we would expect to have 5.3% return over the longer term period. And how those show up graphically, we show on the left there in an efficient region model. Higher and to the left is better, that it has less volatility or standard deviation on the x-axis and higher return on the y-axis. Slide 24, very quickly, this is a mathematical exercise that we typically share. Again, I'll point to the bottom of the page showing that 5.9% that we expect for the long term, over the long term for these for this pool. And the 70-30 is 5.3, again on the right. Each individual asset class is shown up above. And just to show that the lighter striped bars are showing the equilibrium or the long-term 25-year expected return, and the darker bars are showing the 10-year return. That is more of a mathematical exercise saying, if these numbers were to revert to the mean, what would the expected return be? And so you can see that where, based on valuations where they are today, U.S. equities are only expected to return 20 basis points. Natural resource equities only expected to return 70 basis points, and treasuries 20 basis points as well. Slide 25, this is just helpful context to remind us all that, you know, while 5.9% is the expected return, which is the median or the 50th percentile of this range in each period over the short or long term, in the shorter term, you would expect more volatility. And so the range of expected returns is wider in the three-year time frame than it would be in the 25-year time frame. So just giving that context that it won't be 5.9% every year. In terms of the one thing I would call out for our alternative assets, and I would just point to performance on slide 29. We show here that the legacy assets have outperformed by 620 basis points, and the total CA managed assets have outperformed by over 22%. And provide more detail on that and for the legacy assets on slide 31 and 32, but I won't go through each of those slides here. And so last, I'll just quickly jump to slide 35, just to briefly talk about the DAO and blockchain discussion. I'll cut to the chase here. The exposure in the portfolio is 4 basis points to blockchain technology, and so to companies leveraging blockchain technology. So de minimis exposure today, and the posture here is that there's no intention of allocating to a dedicated blockchain manager in the near future at all. So I'll take this section with a grain of salt in terms of how much time we would really spend to allocate here. We do provide some definitions of helpful, not just on this page, but in the appendix of this section. But I might just point you to the volatility that really is sort of an eyesore for us as we think about allocations to any asset class. Having the price of one crypto asset, Bitcoin, down 75%, within such a short period of time is disconcerting, to say the least. And it wasn't just Bitcoin that really suffered. Crypto assets, an exchange of 200 crypto assets was down nearly 71%. So similar story of volatility, and one of the main reasons why we would not allocate here in the near term. But just more generally, I think we did see lots of allocations into digital assets in 2021, and we share that on slide 40. But that does not change our perspective in terms of how we would like to. In terms of us thinking about allocating to blockchain in the near term. I'll pause there for any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the committee? And I was remiss in the last agenda item, but I will invite also our ex officio members to participate if they have any questions as well. Seeing none, I'll continue with you, EJ. Thank you.
Those are all of our prepared remarks.
Oh, very good. Thank you. I did want to say that I appreciate the further clarification into cryptocurrency. I know that was a question at the last meeting, and I appreciate you addressing that in these materials. I don't know if there are any other questions from others. It doesn't look like there is. Oh, it looks like Regent Boylan, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just maybe Mr. Klinger could help me with this one, and I'll ask Council Martinez or Council Becker to let me know if this is the right place to ask this question, since it's all about investments. The Bitcoin, of course, has gone up by 11% in the last couple of days. It's a great investment, but risky. I know that. And I asked this the last time. But I had a question about our investments and all this stuff, because it's above my pay grade. But I know that, and I made a note here about Russia and China working together to bring down the dollar and use the Chinese yuan in their dealings in Africa and South America and between themselves. If something like that happens and our dollar falls precipitously in 2023, which it's most likely to happen, do we have a backup plan? And how does that affect our investments in all these different things? Is that a proper question, Mr. Martinez? I see you smiling now. Thank you.
Jimmy Martinez, for the record. If it relates to the investment strategy of the system, then I believe that's a question within the scope of the item.
Thank you, sir. So anybody can help me with that?
Pardon me. This is Deputy Attorney General Becker, for the record. Let's just focus on the part of the question about the backup plan.
Thank you. That's it's an interesting question. I haven't heard it I haven't heard. I think for a while we have expected that the U.S. dollar may fall relative to other currencies, and that has largely been because of the extent to which the U.S. dollar outperformed over many, many years. Cambridge's house view is that the dollar still remains overvalued. That's part of the reason why we've been maintaining a slightly higher tilt towards international equities. That positioning, candidly, has we have been too early on that call for a while, and so that has been a relative detractor from performance until 2022, when the dollar did start to slide. We still think there's room to go. In terms of a precipitous collapse, I'm not familiar with many broad forecasts for that, for the U.S. dollar. I would note that we do have exposure to currencies in other countries, but the bulk of our exposure is still in U.S. dollars, and I think I don't know that that sort of tail risk is one that we could necessarily hedge against in terms of the stability of the U.S. dollar writ large.
Madam Chair, may I?
Yes, please go ahead.
A quick question, because I'm not very good at investments, but since Councillor Becker said it was also, okay to ask about this, so is there any investments that we have made in the Forex, you know, the foreign exchange market and the foreign currencies, to hedge against the dollar going down? Is that how it works?
Some of our underlying managers, particularly in the hedge fund space, may be active in currency markets as part of their strategy. From an asset allocation perspective, we have not entered into any contracts. These tend to be quite expensive. Looking out at the markets, I think it's been widely understood for quite some time that the U.S. dollar had been overvalued. And so if you want to buy protection or buy, let's call it insurance simplistically, against something that is widely expected to happen, it will cost you a great deal. So we would effectively be paying upfront in premia to get the sort of protection against something that is likely to happen. But again, I would say that we have quite a bit of diversification into international markets. That's part of why our, for example, when we just went through the operating fund rebalancing, we trimmed from international markets because that was the part of the portfolio that outperformed on a relative basis. So we had an ending allocation that was above our policy target. So what the committee just approved today was to trim that overweight to international equities. We've basically harvested that outperformance, and we're going to redeploy in other parts of the portfolio. So I do think that conceptually the good point that you're raising about currency differentials and how there is likely to be pressure on the U.S. dollar, we would agree with. And I think through our asset allocation, particularly within equities, that's one way that we are that we will benefit should that sort of continued weakness of the U.S. dollar continue.
Well, thank you so much, and I can tell that you're a sharp young lady because you made that so simple for a simple man like me. So even that's good. I understand. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Regent Boylan, for the question. So this is a information-only agenda item. So I will open the floor up for any other questions or comments from the committee or others. Seeing none, I will move on to item number 7, annual review of the operating fund allocations and recommendations. And for that, I'll go to Mr. Vertrees.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho. Rep Vertrees for the record. As mentioned in the orientation agenda item, one of the most important actions the committee can take is regular review of the policies and procedures that govern the investment process. Per Title IV, Chapter 10, Section 6B8 in the board handbook, it states the committee will determine at least annually, with input from the NSHE Chief Financial Officer, the appropriate size of each pool within the parameters of these guidelines. This serves as the annual review of that policy. In making our recommendations to the committee, one of the most critical factors is knowing the institution's upcoming liquidity needs. Technically, the whole operating pool is available for day-to-day operations. However, it is more difficult from a timing perspective to divest from long-term pool. Therefore, we try to size the short-term and intermediate-term pools to cover our any expected or unexpected liquidity needs. Over the years, we have found that maintaining approximately $150 million is sufficient to cover the day-to-day operations and unexpected demands. Currently, there's about $250 million in the short-term and intermediate-term pools. Normally, under these conditions, we would recommend a reallocation into the long-term pool. However, as you can see in the materials, we are expecting two large disbursements, and therefore we are recommending to maintain the current allocation. That concludes my overview. Please let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Vertrees. No, I'm good. Are there any questions or comments? I see Vice Chair Perkins. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is about the percentage that we hold in the operating fund. In light of the governor's speech, we might about how Nevada as a state is allocating more to the rainy day. I'll use that, you know, air quotes, rainy day fund. What would that look like for us to increase the amount of our operating pool percentage?
I'll go to Mr. Vertrees for that answer.
Let's see. Andrew, can you
help with that? Madam Chair. Yeah. Madam Chair, if I might jump in.
Please.
Madam Chair, for the record, CFO Klinger, and so we don't really have what I would call a rainy day fund. So we're talking about the operating pool. At this point, we don't really have a rainy day fund. I think the closest thing we had to a rainy day fund was what we called the market fluctuation account. That was the $50 million that was allocated out to the institutions back when we were doing budget cuts. So that was I think the closest thing that we had to a rainy day fund. The way the policy is set up now, is that you really won't, that reserve account really would be the only area you could sort of create a rainy day fund, if you will. But the way the policy is structured now, because any balance over 8% in that reserve account automatically gets distributed to the institutions, that account won't build up over time the way it did previously. Now, certainly the committee could change that policy and could change the policy in a way that said, you know, every month we're going to put a certain percentage into a market fluctuation account, which is currently in policy, or we could create something else. So you could create a mechanism to do that. But the idea with changing the policy the way we did was to get those investment allocations out to the institutions quicker. So instead of letting them build up an account that is held at system administration, the reason we put that policy in that anything over 8% goes to the campuses was just to get those investment earnings out to the campuses quicker. So you're balancing that versus wanting to create a sort of reserve, additional reserve account to hold for contingencies.
Thank you. That made it as clear as mud, Andrew, or Mr. Klinger. I guess because the governor said he was going to allocate more for, like you said, emergency funding or, you know, emergency things like in case the budget, because, you know, we do have a very volatile budget in Nevada. Because we depend on tourism so much. So would it be wise for us to kind of mimic that, or are we good with our operating allocations?
Madam Chair, for the record, CFO Klinger to Regent Perkins. You know, one of the things that happens now, and we don't have a system-wide policy for this, but perhaps as we look at implementing policies as they were recommended by the LCB auditors. This is one that we could certainly look at. But the practical matter is right now the institutions independently set funds aside. I mean, I don't, in some cases they, I don't know, they don't call them rainy day funds, but they have contingency funds set aside. What we don't have is we don't have a system-wide policy that says, you know, that prescribes a certain amount or a certain percentage. We don't do that currently, but that perhaps is something, like I said, as we go through those policies for the LCB auditors and make changes, that is potentially something we could look at.
Thank you. I guess I'll put that on new business. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vice Chair Perkins, and thank you, CFO Klinger, for that clarification. I would say that those reserve amounts are outside of the what we're talking about on this agenda item. So that would be appropriate in new business, definitely, I would say. So the agenda item is for possible action, and the recommendation from staff is to remain the same as what we have been doing in terms of the operating account. So are there any other questions or comments regarding that at this time? With that, I will ask for a motion regarding keeping the operating fund allocations in the current levels that they are at now.
Regent Brager, I would make a motion to keep our current allocations as stated by staff.
Thank you, Regent Brager.
Second, Regent Perkins.
Second.
Oh, it looks like I got the second from Regent Perkins first. I'm sorry, Regent Tarkanian. Is there any other discussion?
Fine.
I will call for the vote then. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item number 8, outsourced chief investment officer services. I will go to Assistant Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Rhett Vertrees.
Rhett Vertrees for the record. Governance of our endowment investments is a collective enterprise involving the work of system staff, the investment committee, and the full board. The most common practice and currently our practice is to retain professional service providers who act under contracts to carry out duties with respect to specific investment management and reporting functions under the oversight of the organization staff and investment committee and board. That would be Cambridge. There are three fundamental models: in-house staff model, advice-based or consulting model, and discretionary management or OCI model. As Wendy noted.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Regent.
Could we ask Tarkanian him to speak closer to the mic?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, is that better? There are three fundamental models: in-house model, advice or consulting model, discretionary management or OCIO model. So Cambridge does the advice model for our operating pool and OCI model for our endowment pool. We recently reviewed these models. In September of 2020, the committee voted to continue the OCI model for our endowment pool and go to one OCI overseeing the investment starting in January of 2022. An overview of those terms are provided in the briefing paper. The current agreement terminates on December 31st, 2023. There are options to extend or terminate within the agreement. The committee's options are to terminate and pursue an RFP or extend the current agreement. Our recommendation to the committee is to extend the agreement for another year. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Vertrees. I'll open up the floor to anyone on the committee who has any comments or questions regarding this item. This is a item for possible action. I don't see any discussion regarding this. I think it is prudent to follow the advice of staff on this item. I And I think that it would be wise to extend this agreement for one more year. That's my personal opinion. I'll open it up to any other regions who are here who are not on the committee, and it looks like Region Del Carlo would like to say something.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho. I just want to say I totally support. Sorry about that. My husband's going just a minute. Sorry about that. I just want to say I totally support extending the contract. I think that Wendy's done a marvelous job, and I've been on this committee before and was on it quite a long time and kind of came on when she came on, and she's tops, and I think we would do ourselves a disservice if we didn't extend her contract. Thank you.
Thank you, Region Del Carlo. Region Brager?
I was going to say, if there's no more questions or concerns, I would make a motion to approve the item number 8 to go from till December 31st, 2024.
Thank you for that motion, Region Brager. Is there a second? Thank you, Regent Tarkanian. Is there any further discussion regarding this item? If not, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Item number 9, new business. I will call for new business from committee members.
Madam Chair, if I may, Regent Perkins here.
Yes, please.
To examine the percentage of the operating budget that is set aside for contingencies, and the report on what the institutions spend the disbursements on as a report back to this body.
Thank you, Vice Chair Perkins. Others on the committee?
Madam Chair.
Yes, CFO Klinger.
Sorry. Can I just get a clarification from Regent Perkins on the report requested on disbursements? Because there's disbursements from the NCHI endowment count, and there's also disbursements from the operating pool.
Last one. From the endowment account. Thank you for that.
Online.
Thank you, Regent Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
Regent Tarkanian, your microphone is still on, just to let you know. Are there any other items for new business from committee members? I would like to add one item. I would ask Cambridge Associates to provide a report on the investments that they are managing for us that represent what Mr. Vertrees mentioned at the beginning with the orientation regarding socially responsible investing, ESG investing, and impact investing. I'd like to know what work you're doing in that area on our behalf. I would appreciate that report. I'd like to go to Regent Del Carlo.
I didn't ask to be called on. Sorry.
Oh, my apologies. Thank you. Are there any other items for new business?
Yes, ma'am.
Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm going to ask for a regent request, Mr. Martinez. That can be asked for in new business, right? I can make this a regent request.
The region's requests are a separate process that could be sent in into, I believe it's the chancellor and board staff.
Chancellor and board staff, right. Okay, then I'll just keep this as new business, and I'm sure follow up with the region's request too. I'll preface it again with what I said earlier. I wasn't sure if it was the right place to ask that question, but I would really like new business if we could come up with some sort of a brochure or a few pages that list out the different foundations we have in our institutions. I'm really not sure how many we have and what they do and how they help out with ENSHI. So it's something that I would like later on to ask about the grants and the endowments, but that's separate. But if we could get some sort of a brochure with detailed information about each foundation and all the institutions. Is that possible, Madam Chair?
We will note that in the minutes. Thank you, Regent Boylan.
Okay.
Chair Cavallo?
Yes. Vice Chair Arizcata.
Thank you very much. A couple items for new business. One is the a little bit more information or background regarding the operating and the endowment pool for the protective securities and updating the benchmark calculations to dynamic weights. I'd like to get a little bit of background on that. And also, Mr. Klinger, in regards to the liquidity management practices, just did some quick research. That was adopted in 2019. If we can get some update on that, and considering it was updated on 2019, Chair Cavallo, I don't want to overstep any boundaries here, but that was updated in 2019, possibly reviewing that liquidity management practice and updating that to 2023. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, before I go on to new business, I want to take a moment to say thank you to somebody. Cece Perales in Reno is retiring on Monday after 26 years of service. And this is her last board meeting. And we just want to thank her and wish her best of luck in her retirement. Thank you, Cece.
And here she comes. Come on up, Cece.
We see your face up there a lot, and you're always smiling and always very, very helpful. And
there she is.
We thank you so much for everything that you do for us. And like I said, we wish you the best in retirement. I hope that you have something really fun that you're going to enjoy. We're going to miss you here at ENSHI. So thank you so much. Did you want to say something? Please go ahead.
Here, come up on this side. Come on this side, Cece.
Thank you. It's been a great experience working here. I plan to do a lot of traveling too.
Oh.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Cece.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to public comment. Is there any public comment in ELCO?
There is no public comment in ELCO.
Thank you. Public comment in Reno?
None in Reno.
There's no public comment here in Las Vegas. So with that, I will adjourn this meeting at 10:38.